Good evening. This is a WKZO News special, 50 Years of News in West Michigan. I'm Fred Douglas. In September of 1931, WKZO Radio signed on the air as the voice of Western Michigan. In the intervening 50 years, many amazing things have occurred, and some staggering events have rocked the world. We experienced a depression, a world war, the advent of nuclear bombs, the Korean conflict, the beginning of space exploration and travel, the assassination of a president, a walk on the moon, attempts at killing other presidents, and a host of less global events affecting this area. For instance, the severe storms which have hit Michigan winter and summer, a president from Grand Rapids, a World Series winner in Detroit, and a vast array of other happenings that have attracted our attention. When we began this effort, that is, a review of the last 50 years of news affecting Western Michigan, it seemed like a simple task of chronology. In fact, what has been the most difficult task has been the job of sorting out those events to pick off ones which are most likely to be remembered as important or of general memory to you, whether you've lived in this part of the world for much of the past 50 years. We thought, too, that we would have a record in sound, but of course that is not entirely possible because there are few recordings of events in those early years. And secondly, we wanted to mention a large sampling of things which had Western Michigan talking since 1931. We hope to touch on things close to you, often, but we think the items that we have to report tonight greatly affected segments of this area in the past 50 years. Kalamazoo in the 1930s was described by local reports as being a community on the main line of the Michigan Central Railroad, east and west, and the north-south line of the Pennsylvania from Fort Wayne, as well as the North-South New York Central Railroad. A spur served the Grand Trunk Railroad, and the CK&S ran its independent belt line to the port of South Haven for foreign freight. Five separate bus lines served Kalamazoo, and American Airlines flew into Kalamazoo's Lindbergh Field, a 310-acre airport south of the city. WKZO Radio served southwestern Michigan, along with the Kalamazoo Gazette, for news. The county population was 96,000, and celery and paper were the major industries. In fact, 4.5 million pounds of paper was produced from the Kalamazoo area's 9 large mills. Recreation was abundant, and golf, generally, was 50 cents for 9 holes. Kalamazoo residents were fourth in the state for per capita spending at $811.11 in 1931. Big news that year included the new City Hall construction in Kalamazoo. It was just 1 year after the 15-story Bank of Kalamazoo building, now the American National Bank, was built and opened at a whopping cost of $1.25 million. In the area, Three Rivers was expanding its water system by adding a storage tank. Galesburg became a city. Otsego marked its centennial. Allegan paved 3.5 miles of streets. And South Haven's port business was booming. 12,953 tons of wood pulp arrived from foreign ports for the Kalamazoo Valley paper mills. Kalamazoo's Civic Auditorium, gift of Dr. W.E. Upjohn, opened, and the Peppermint King, A.M. Todd, was one of the leading citizens who died. As the decade progressed, the Depression became a serious problem for many people. Tax cuts were the order of the day as local government cut costs by reducing salaries. Prohibition was in effect, and federal raids were reported from time to time. In 1932, pneumonia was the number one cause of death from contagious illness in the county, nearly 68 deaths per thousand. Tuberculosis came in at about one-third of that rate. Public transportation took a turn in Kalamazoo in 32 as the streetcars disappeared and motor coaches, we call them buses, appeared to take their place. Sales of cars were important in the early 30s, as they are today. One big story then was the sale of 20 new cars in 1 week, and 512 sets of license plates were purchased for 1933 that week in Kalamazoo County. Good news in Michigan, there were no savings and loan failures in that year. They were called building and loan associations then. Bank failures in the nation totaled 1,444. That was in addition to the 2,300 some that failed the year before. The Lindbergh baby kidnapping was major news in the nation. But in western Michigan, local news included an increasing port business at South Haven. Allegan County was a leader in muskrat and raccoon fur production. Sturgis Power Plant profits paid all of the city's operating expenses. There was no need for operating taxes. And Kalamazoo mourned the loss of Upjohn Company Chief Dr. W.E. Upjohn. Nationally, big-name crime figures were big news in 33. Dillinger was still a factor to be reckoned with, but some things were getting better. A big day in Schoolcraft came with the reopening of its bank after being closed for more than a year. Those that owned automobiles bought regular gasoline for 16.5 cents a gallon. Ethyl was 19.5. Kalamazoo College marked its centennial, the oldest college in Michigan, second only to the University of Michigan for higher education. The Kalamazoo tax bill for city residents was reduced despite mounting welfare costs. Public works programs were restoring employment to the thousands out of work. At South Haven, again, a new record set with 100 major freight vessels unloading cargo for Western Michigan. In Europe, Hitler was making news with persecution of the Jews in Germany. Back in this country, a devastating earthquake in the Long Beach and Los Angeles area killed 120 people, and a gunman trying to assassinate President Roosevelt killed Chicago's Mayor Cermak in the process. In 1934, Allegan residents voted a bond issue to complete their Kalamazoo River hydroelectric plant and municipal dam. Prohibition ended, and liquor taxes were seen as the biggest factor to save public schools in Michigan. Kalamazoo County's relief for the unemployed amounted to $1 million, and there was mixed reaction to the fact that the three big-name criminals, John Dillinger, Pretty Boy Floyd, and Babyface Nelson, were all wiped out by the feds in various locations. Bruno Hauptmann was arrested for the Lindbergh baby kidnapping, and the Dion quintuplets were born and survived. Here in Western Michigan, Plainwell incorporated as a city, and the Upjohn Company began a gigantic $650,000 expansion program, bringing to Kalamazoo the complex between Lovell, South Portage, and Henrietta Streets in the Central Business District. Moving through the 30s found good and bad news constantly, a fact which still continues. Kalamazoo County equaled its all-time traffic death record with 48 people killed, the same as in 1929. More than a fourth of the county's families were receiving public relief in 1935. Allegan County, which paved M89 from Otsego to Allegan in 1932, paved M40 from Allegan to Holland. Mattawan got a new high school courtesy of the Public Works Administration, and in Kalamazoo County, the county building collapsed. Two people were killed. 35 was the year that Will Rogers and Wiley Post were killed in an Alaska plane crash, and Babe Ruth hung up his Boston Brave baseball uniform. The advent of television, something not fully understood, appeared in 36 as RCA announced a $1 million project for comprehensive field testing of high-definition TV. In this area, the state was investigating the possibility of closing Western State Teachers College. Western survived. The community chest in Kalamazoo celebrated a campaign that went over the top for a change and an opportunity to pay 100% of its planned allotments. Buses were popular in Kalamazoo, 3 million riders in 36. Elsewhere on the streets, 63 persons were killed in traffic accidents in the county, with 251 injured. Interestingly, Sunday was the highest crash total day of the week. It was a banner year in another way. No murders were recorded in 36 in Kalamazoo County. Galesburg got a new dial telephone system. Pawpaw opened a new state police post. Otsego paved 6 miles of streets. And the January-February winter weather was a standard, 15-foot snowdrifts in some places. On the other hand, July recorded the high temp for the year, 109 degrees. Scarlet fever struck with a vengeance. 40 cases recorded in 2.5 months at the end of 1936. Bloomingdale lost virtually an entire city block to fire. 7 buildings were taken. Kalamazoo was creating educational history by eliminating the use of grades for elementary students and going to a satisfactory or unsatisfactory system based on the student's own ability to achieve. WKZO's power was increased to 1,000 watts in 1936, although the station remained a daytime operation. Collaborating with another engineer, John Fetzer helped develop the innovative idea of a directional antenna, and that made possible, eventually, full-time nightly operation for WKZO and eventually other stations. The issue was not without its problems, however. The 590 case, as it was called, went through the United States Supreme Court twice, and finally had to be decided on the floor of the United States Senate before the first experimental license was granted to WKZO in 1938. History got a shot in the arm in 37 for the second time in 10 years in Kalamazoo as construction workers unearthed the bones of a mastodon while digging beneath North Pitcher Street to install sewers to the new Upjohn warehouse. The skeletal remains were dubbed 25,000 years old from the interglacial period after the Ice Age. It was 1927 that the first prehistoric mastodon remains were unearthed along Patterson Street, a 7-foot-long tusk in muck and clay. An earthquake rocked the Kalamazoo area that year. Loy Norix was named superintendent of schools. Kalamazoo became debt-free, the largest city so situated in the entire nation. Scarlet fever continued its scourge with 237 more cases in Kalamazoo County. Trains were a problem then, too, so a viaduct was built for East Michigan Avenue. The Maple Lake Dam was destroyed at Pawpaw, leaving lakeshore residents high and dry. Water was a problem in other ways in many areas as rain drove rivers and creeks over their banks. Three Rivers had its worst flooding in 30 years. Kalamazoo's Company C was called up to work at the Flint labor strike riots, and in other national events, the Hindenburg crashed, killing 35, Amelia Earhart disappeared on a round-the-world flight, and the average wage for a Michigan family was $1,265 a year. For recreation, Saugatuck opened its famous oval. As the decade moved toward a close, in 1938, industrial expansion was making news in western Michigan as Kalamazoo and Sutherland paper companies were building major new units. The Eckrich Company constructed a new plant, and oil became a household discussion. Brady Township and the Fulton area hoped for big finds. They weren't that big. But over in Van Buren County, black crude was everywhere, it seemed, particularly around Bloomingdale. The new Kalamazoo County building was a sight to see, and a new Kalamazoo post office was opened. Marcellus was a leader in the nation for muskrat pelts, $500,000 worth of raw fur that year. The world's largest fish hatchery was completed at Wolf Lake. 5,000 people attended the dedication, and Eleanor Roosevelt, the president's wife, came to Kalamazoo and spoke at Central High School Auditorium. Schoolcraft got a new school, and savers were receiving 3% on passbook accounts at savings and loan institutions. A spectacular fire lit the area when the Kalamazoo Lumber Company was two-thirds destroyed by flames, and the Kalamazoo County Sheriff began his highway patrol program. Oil continued into 39 as one of the big area stories. They even built refineries in Bloomingdale. At Western, Waldo Stadium and Himes Field were dedicated. Kalamazoo College completed the Wells Hall complex, and huge windstorms and tornadoes lashed the area in the middle of the year. East Michigan traffic, once stopped by trains, was stopped by flooding under the viaduct. And a fairly rural restaurant, way out at White's Road in Westnage, Chicken Charlie's by name, was destroyed by fire. He rebuilt. Elsewhere in the state, a study began to see if a bridge really could be built across the Straits of Mackinac. Governor Frank Fitzgerald died, so Lieutenant Governor Lern Dickinson took the reins. Governor Dickinson was 80 years young. Michigan spent $13.5 million on highway construction, and in Otsego, a fire destroyed the Farnsworth garage with spectacular flames. We turned the corner into the 40s. The county population in Kalamazoo was over the 100,000 mark, just over half of which lived in Kalamazoo City. Military affairs were big in the area for 1940. Fort Custer was under expansion to become the headquarters for the 5th Army Division. Company C was called up again for training. Construction boomed as nearly 900 buildings were finished or underway at Fort Custer. Shades of 1981. The Red Cross was seeking aid for Poland, and there was a major fund drive to help the Finnish people as Hitler was on a rampage in Europe, along with Mussolini. On our other side, Hirohito was attacking in China. All aliens were ordered to register beginning in 1940. Western enrolled nearly 3,000 students that year, and Michigan had its first woman lieutenant governor as Matilda Wilson was appointed by Governor Dickinson. Polio struck many in the summer of 1940. Oil was dropping in Bloomingdale, and the Maple Isle Park was developed at Pawpaw. Armistice Day brought what was to become the benchmark for Lake Michigan storms when 5 vessels were lost, 67 persons killed, and boats at docks up and down the lake were severely damaged or destroyed. Richland joined the dial telephone list, and draft registration was established. Michigan's first call was expected to be just under 3,000. Construction around Kalamazoo was booming. Over 500 homes built, and the new W.T. Grant building was erected in the Central Business District. For WKZO, 1940 was another benchmark year.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. The Columbia Network salutes station WKZO of Kalamazoo, Michigan, the newest member of the Columbia Coast-to-Coast Broadcasting System.
1941 was a somewhat normal year for the first 11 months and 6 days, but it became a year to live in infamy as Japan bombed Pearl Harbor. So the United States and Japan went to war, and 3 days later, the United States declared war on Germany and Italy. Earlier in the year, during less turbulent time, the state enjoyed prosperity. A new Douglas Community Center was opened. The Morrow Steam Plant was built on the Kalamazoo River and was dedicated. A $500,000 expansion program began at the Kalamazoo Municipal Airport. South Haven built a new hospital, and a well-known state Republican figure, Frank McKay of Grand Rapids, who had been indicted on mail fraud charges, came away with a deadlocked federal jury. The new Greyhound bus terminal, a nearly doubled YMCA, and F.W. Woolworth Company store graced Kalamazoo as ownership of the First National Bank was consolidated in Kalamazoo, and Kalamazoo's industrial bank became the Industrial State Bank. War was the issue in 42. Some 5,000 men from Kalamazoo County alone were in the armed forces. Paul Arendt reported on the news on WKZO. His air name is now a little better known. He's Paul Harvey.
Good evening, Americans. The Japanese have struck a powerful new blow in the air at the Allies in the Southwest Pacific. A strong force of enemy planes made a dawn raid Wednesday on the eastern tip of New Guinea. No details yet, but the assault is extremely significant.
Virtually every Kalamazoo area manufacturing plant was producing for the war effort. Where 5 years earlier jobs were a problem, now manpower was scarce. In August, a blackout was tested in Kalamazoo with success. In 18 months, Kalamazoo County residents bought $8.8 million in war bonds. Workers were asked to give 10% of every paycheck for war bonds. Fort Custer was reorganized as a military police training center, and Kalamazoo became one of two state induction centers handling armed service draftees for 54 counties of the state. Salvage was the watchword, everything from metal to fats, rubber, tin, silk, and nylon. Ingersoll made amphibious units for the Army. Kalamazoo Sled made toboggans for the snow fronts. Rationing hit everything, everywhere. In Three Rivers, a tornado hit, killing one, injuring a half a dozen, and causing $125,000 damage in less than 30 seconds. WKZO's power was increased to 5,000 watts. State residents were shocked by race riots in Detroit during 1943. 34 were killed in that period. War and scandal were the biggest news. A one-man grand jury began investigating graft in the Michigan legislature. The judge was Leland Carr. The state's biggest military complex surrounded Fort Custer and Kalamazoo and Calhoun counties. In 1 year, Percy Jones Hospital treated 5,500 war wounded. Rationing continued for fuel oil, gasoline, meats, fats, processed foods, sugar, shoes, and tires. A new lock was opened at the Sioux, and the president of the Ford Motor Company, Edsel Ford, died. President Roosevelt in 1943 and 44 was telling the nation to begin thinking about the post-war peace effort. The Yanks took Paris, MacArthur made good on a pledge to return to the Philippines, and the famous B-29s joined the war effort. Kalamazoo was concerned about water shortages, and so it began a major well construction program to relieve the problem. The city acquired a major piece of real estate when the Blanche Hull estate was given to the city. Upjohn Park was expanded through acquisition and elimination of several homes. 17,000 Kalamazoo area people were employed in war production, and materiel flowed constantly from plants in the area. The Carr grand jury brought indictments of big-name elected Republicans, Democrats, and private individuals for graft involving the legislature. And the Fisher brothers left General Motors to form their own company. At the end of the year, 39 Kalamazoo municipal employees retired, the first ones to enjoy a newly created retirement annuity program for municipal workers. And bus rides were still a nickel. 1945 was seen as the best year in decades. Indeed, some said that it was the most eventful in history, a statement that probably was reconsidered on several occasions later when events that preceded 45 and followed it were placed in more realistic perspective. 1945? Well, the biggest news of all was the end of World War II. Nothing could compare with that fact because it touched virtually every life. Good news, tempered by the tragedy of the war itself. Victory in Europe came in May, the war in the Pacific continued, and the United States dropped atomic bombs in Hiroshima and then Nagasaki in August. VJ Day came in September on the 2nd. The nation's best-known war correspondent, Ernie Pyle, didn't see the end of hostilities. He was killed in April. He was called the soldier's friend. Also in April, President Franklin Delano Roosevelt died after a cerebral hemorrhage, and Harry S. Truman succeeded him. In Michigan, everything was normal. Things ranged from spectacular to average, as usual. Among spectacular events was the J.R. Jones and Company fire in downtown Kalamazoo. 16 persons were killed during the year in county fires. The Office of Price Administration, OPA, governed the cost of virtually everything we needed or wanted, and the state prepared for a post-war period which brought labor unrest and strikes. Kalamazoo River pollution was seen to be a very serious problem warranting major attention. State Senator Warren Hooper was gunned down near his Albion home during the graft investigation of the legislature. He had been a grand jury witness. The Detroit Tigers took it all, and everyone watched for returning vets' names to see if their sweethearts, sons, husbands, and fathers would be on the next returning troop ship to dock in New York or San Francisco. 190,000 Michigan men came home that year. During the war, 615,000 went away. 12,000 gave their lives in the effort. After 1945, the rest of the 40s seemed calm by comparison. Building, which had virtually stopped and seemingly backed up, got started again. The Upjohn Company began major projects which resulted in the huge complex in Portage. The face of the community was changing. Construction was going on everywhere. In the 40s, many people took lifetime jobs with companies. Back then, WKZO carried a series on companies which made the jobs. Dr. Willis Dunbar, who was a regular commentator and broadcaster, toured plants and on one program visited with Claridge Fan Company workers.
I'd like to talk to another Claridge worker here, Patrick Henry Sage. Hank, how long have you been with Claridge?
54 years.
54 years. I think that makes you the oldest employee here, does it?
Yeah.
And tell us what you do now and what you did when you first came.
Well, I have charge of the boiler room now, have for the last 12 years. But before that, I was foreman in the fabricating department.
What was the Claridge industry like when you first came here, Hank?
It was just a repair business. Built generators, we built electric light machines, and done all general repairing for the whole city, you might say.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, didn't you tell me you repaired motors for the old street cars?
Yeah, we had as high as 13 of them laying on the floor at one time up in the old shop on Church Street.
Is that so? The old shop used to be up on Church Street, you
Church
say?
Street.
I see. Have you got any hobbies, Hank?
Oh, fishing.
Around Kalamazoo, Paper City Motors built an impressive structure on Kalamazoo Avenue. Keegan DeSoto Chrysler built on Maple Street. The Westnage Hill Apartments adjusted the face of the hill. And Western Michigan College dedicated $4 million in buildings. Kalamazoo County joined the city of Kalamazoo's debt-free classification in the second half of the decade. Other news events found G. Menon Williams moving into the governor's office in Lansing to begin a lengthy stay. Bronson Medical Center for Physicians was nearly completed, and an innovation came in the auto industry. Ford Motor Company workers won pensions. A Byron Center couple was arrested in what was called a mail-order romance killing spree. And the Consul General to China, Angus Ward of Allegan, was taken into custody and then released. He returned to Allegan to visit the family after that. The problem was the communists had taken over in China, and politics brought significant changes, as we were just starting to learn. The late 40s also saw President Truman defeat Thomas Dewey. The United States and Russia split after being allies in the war. And the shock of all time was the USSR learning the secret of the atomic bomb. Julius and Ethel Rosenberg were executed in the early 50s for the deed, which was deemed high treason. The Nuremberg trials also tried, convicted scores of Nazis for crimes during the war. Today, some individuals are still being found and accused of crimes during that period. They escaped detection and fled the country in the confusion immediately following the end of World War II. School issues were important in the late 40s, too. Here's a report on two elections in 1949 from Dr. Dunbar.
In two towns, Vicksburg and Allegan, important bond issues were included along with the election of school board members. The Vicksburg election resulted in the defeat of the bond issue, which would have provided $540,000 worth of school building construction. The margin of the loss was 73 votes. The Vicksburg Commercial reported last week that this was the second time that the proposal had been turned down by Vicksburg voters. Allegan's desperate school building situation was not improved by the election last Monday. Allegan voters turned down a $600,000 bond issue by a vote of 572 to 476. The bonds would have provided the funds for the construction of badly needed elementary school buildings. The Allegan News reported that the voters did approve a millage increase for a period of 20 years. A couple of Allegan businessmen commented to the WKZO News Department, however, that the millage increase won't help at all, that the buildings were the important items on the election slate.
Kalamazoo was different then. Again, Dr. Dunbar.
Most of us, when we're downtown in Kalamazoo, have rather definite objectives. We have to do some shopping in certain stores, visit the bank, or conduct business in some office. Intent on our errands, we're apt not to see the interesting things and the interesting people about us. The other day, I set out just to roam around the downtown section on a weekday morning to see what I could see and hear what I could hear. Well, the first thing that struck my eye was a lot of red coats and dresses in a woman's shop, a red that is out of this world. And that reminded me that some chap that investigates people's tastes found out that red is the favorite color of most people. And then here's a bake shop with several birthday cakes on display. One has a Donald Duck design on top. And here's a men's hat store. Seems to me more men used to wear caps than now. The 5 and 10 store coming up. Well, let's go in. First, there's the odor, a subtle blend of donuts, cheap perfume, new merchandise, and barbecue sauce. On the window, a sign. Let us count our blessings. Democracy works here. A vast display of nail polish of any color you want in tiny bottles. 10 cents plus 2 cents federal tax. A woman tries to intrigue me into having my picture taken, and she still smiles when I reply with a firm no. There on a rack, probably 200 ready-tied, four-in-hand neckties, 39 cents apiece. Wonder what kind of men wear those nowadays. A lot of live plants, mostly ivy. Easter eggs with huge cellophane bows around them. Mouse traps, 5 cents. Now, how can they afford to make a nice mouse trap and sell it for a nickel? When the dealers all down the line get a cut, how much did the maker get? I noticed that they're made in a place called Lititz, Pennsylvania. Never heard of that before. Framed pictures of movie stars with all the glamour. Greeting cards on a huge display rack. Birthday, wedding, sympathy, convalescent, comic convalescent. Sign on the wall, ask about our layaway plan. Well, that's a new one on me. I didn't know the 5 and 10 stores had layaway plans. Well, now to a classy department store. In the window, blue denim sports outfits for women. Inside the door, the odor of perfume and powder. Clerks arranging jewelry, looking a little bored. Scholarly-looking man browsing among the books. Woman clerk in the basement with a pleasant look and a big wad of hair on her head with a yellow pencil stuck into it. Very businesslike. Another 5 and 10. A long lunch bar with about 25 people sitting on stools, most of them drinking coffee. A little girl with her mother. Why isn't she in school? Munching a donut. Ah, here is something that brings back childhood memories. Jacks. Remember the game? You get 10 jacks and a rubber ball, all for a dime. Up the street now to that new building the telephone company is constructing, 7 stories high. Just to think, all of that for a telephone company. What in Tunket will they use all that space for? Workmen wearing metal helmets. A stonemason calmly chiseling away high above the street, puffing his pipe. In front, workmen digging up the street. Wonder why they're always digging up the pavement in Kalamazoo. Seems like there are 3 solutions to all our problems in Kalamazoo. Restrict parking, cut down a tree, or dig up the street. The Pythian building. And why do they call it that? I went over and looked at the list of tenants. Not a Pythian listed.
A bookstore. Ask the clerk what his bestsellers are. Cheaper by the Dozen is Going Great Guns. The Big Fisherman by Lewis Douglas is almost an all-time bestseller. Fountainhead, although not a new book, is a steady good seller, as is Knock on Any Door. Jewelry stores, a tiny watch that sells for $195. By the way, the shoe stores seem to all have modernistic fronts. Nylons for $1.29. Visions of the war days when you lined up to buy them at any price. A drugstore, so-called. In the window, gloves, pills, window cleaner, clothespins, scouring powder, and candy. That candy deserves special mention. Two pails of those old-fashioned peppermint and wintergreen lozenges that we used to get in a paper sack when Dad came home from Hubbard's grocery store. A hardware store with spring in the window, rakes and hoes and flower pots and seeds. And then the bus station. Two old gentlemen reading a paper and a pale-looking, well-dressed man past middle age, completely absorbed in a mystery comic magazine. A man and his wife sitting patiently waiting for the bus and looking very contented. The schedule indicates that about 75 buses leave Kalamazoo during an average 24-hour period. That's a lot of buses. They have a mechanical shoe shiner in the bus station. Put a dime in the slot, put your shoe under one brush for the wax, and then under the other for the polish. A man calling a bus over the public address system, utterly unintelligible. By the way, remember those leather-lung fellows that used to call the trains in the big terminals before the day of the PA systems? They really knew how to enunciate. Out of the bus station now and down the street past a barber shop, where a sign reads, "Closed at noon Saturday." In a country town, that's when the business of the tonsorial artist really got going. Coconuts in the window of a fruit store. When have you had a fresh coconut? I haven't tasted one for years. Into a pet store where there are canaries, a parrot, and two monkeys. The monkeys attract droves of children every Saturday, I was told. Out into the cold again, and noticing a group of workmen drilling holes in the sidewalk for those parking meters. A Chinese laundry. Sam Lee. Wonder how our Chinese citizens are making out in the laundry and restaurant business.
Dr. Willis Dunbar, taking a tour of Kalamazoo in 1949. There was concern about the future for the community at the time. A public affairs conference was held in the mid-40s to list programs that community organizations might try. The list included four major issues. How shall we solve Kalamazoo's housing problem? How can intergroup understanding and cooperation be affected in Kalamazoo? How shall we provide adequate recreation in Kalamazoo? And how can we make city colony planning effective? Concerns ranged from race relations to religious tolerance and from acceptance of those so-called foreigners to the way veterans and non-veterans would get along at work. Planning issues included the concern that fire protection, parks, garbage and rubbish disposal, and airport might better be handled on a regional or at least larger than the city of Kalamazoo basis. Still in all, community generally ascribed to the slogan, "Life is good in Kalamazoo." The decade of the 50s brought many new changes as a nation, and this area came out from the problems caused by shortages during World War II. Still, for a time, there was concern that we might face it all again as the Korean conflict drew our young men back into battle. Weather never left the list of issues faced by all of the area as we watched the skies in the warm months and shoveled them in the winter. The early 50s brought some real buttes in terms of snowstorms and drifts. The mid-50s carried some of the state's most devastating tornadoes, Standale, Flint, Allegan, some of the areas where twisters rearranged the landscape and brought injury and death. 1950 brought WKZO-TV to Western Michigan. Kalamazoo became the smallest city in the nation to have a VHF television station. Some so-called experts cautioned John Fetzer, already a well-known broadcast industry leader, against the move, saying that only the larger East Coast cities would be able to support television. The 50s continued the building boom that followed the Second World War. Upjohn continued its building. The Borges Medical Center, an office complex for doctors, was built. Schools expanded everywhere to handle the war baby boom. In Kalamazoo, some $15 million was spent on school construction during the decade. Elsewhere, voters approved new schools for Plainwell, Colon, Galesburg, Augusta, Otsego, Pawpaw, South Haven, Hartford, Allegan, Nottawa, and Vicksburg, to name a few. In Allegan, St. Joseph, and Van Buren counties, at the end of the decade, the state was giving the sheriffs and the county boards of supervisors troubles about their jails. Western Michigan College became Western Michigan University. Van Buren County saw significant growth, and South Haven added an industrial plat. Allegan County demolished its historical old county courthouse and prepared to build an ultra-modern county office building. I-94 moved westward and opened from Calhoun County west to Hartford. Not all was expansion, however. At Three Rivers, Fairbanks Morse closed, and Standard Spring did the same in Van Buren County, although some of its employees and management personnel reopened with a new name. It was in 1956 that we learned that the Hungarians were feeling the terrible crunch of the Russian boot. In a freedom movement, they were seen as a threat to the USSR, which sent in column after column of armed troops and tanks to put down the rebellion and kill any resistance. Many have compared the scene of 25 years ago to the potential in Poland today. Russia in 1957 polished its image by launching Sputnik, and the schools in Western Michigan joined the rest of the educational effort in the country to switch everyone to thinking science. In 1959, a Russian shot hit the moon, and the U.S. space effort still dragged, but better days were ahead. At the end of the 50s, Michigan was suffering a severe cash crisis. Many programs, not enough money to pay the bills. That may have contributed, along with sizable other attractions, to the move by many Michigan residents to lead the charge toward our 49th state, Alaska. Names in the news around the nation in the 50s included Ike, Khrushchev, John Foster Dulles, Jonas Salk, the man that broke polio's back, Walter Reuther, and sports figures like Roger Bannister, who broke the four-minute mile, Casey Stengel, Rocky Marciano, and Ingemar Johansson, the heavyweight boxer. Kalamazoo Township and city residents voted on whether to merge in the mid-50s. The vote wasn't approved, and strong efforts were mounted on both sides of the issue. In the waning days of the 50s, Kalamazoo was chosen by the United States Information Agency as the Window of America, a typical American city, for a European exhibit. And at the close of the decade, Kalamazoo constructed the first permanent pedestrian mall in the nation and took a new label, the Mall City. As the 60s began, we looked with hope for success in some new areas, particularly in space. President Kennedy said in early 1961 he wanted to see a United States astronaut on the moon by the end of the decade. President Kennedy was assassinated, but the goal was met well ahead of schedule. His death on the streets of Dallas in 63 caused not only great outpourings of emotion, but one of the greatest controversies the country has seen. The argument continues to this day over how and who actually killed the president in the motorcade. During the 60s, many other events caused interest and concern. The Vietnam War era began, and it was not to end until the early 70s. College and university campuses, including those in Western Michigan, were the centers of debate over the issues of racial discrimination and the validity of the Vietnam conflict. It was the decade of the draft, after a decade of little selective service activity, and thousands of men found themselves back in uniform, a lot of them from this area. It was also the time of the heart transplant operation. Kalamazoo accountant Philip Barnum was one of the recipients. His operation in 1968 provided him with a 15-month lifespan after the implantation. There was unrest in the labor force. Kalamazoo firefighters struck, were dismissed, and returned after a new contract was finally agreed upon. Teacher strikes were new, and they gained a lot of attention during the period. In the early 60s, after a controversial try by some Kalamazoo officials to annex part of Portage, the part where the Upjohn Company was located, a vote was held on the question of incorporation. Petitions to incorporate Portage Township as a city beat petitions for annexation. The vote was scheduled. Portage residents decided that city status was for them. Another vote, late in the decade, was over the question of establishing a regional airport authority for Kalamazoo and Calhoun counties. It lost big, and so work began to make changes at the Kalamazoo Municipal Airport that had been on the back burner awaiting the voters' decision. The 60s found the creation of community colleges. Kalamazoo Valley Community College was one of the early ones in the late 60s and has continued to draw high praise for its operation under the same president, Dr. Dale Lake, for the whole period of its existence. the biggest institution of higher education, Western Michigan University, continued to grow. Dr. James Miller directed its fortunes, and Kalamazoo College attracted regular national attention for unique programs offered on its campus. Another campus story was the killing of several co-eds around Ann Arbor. Finally, an Eastern Michigan University student, John Norman Collins, was arrested, tried, and convicted. He's still in prison. The mid-60s found the Palm Sunday tornadoes in 1965, which racked the area, the worst day for tornadoes in the nation's history. Death and destruction all over Western Michigan, including all of the counties around Kalamazoo. The other big story to hit Western Michigan in the storm arena was the crippling snowstorm of January 1967. Mid-January had been unusually balmy, nearly shirt-sleeve weather. And January 25th was beautiful. January 26th, things changed.
This is the road report as of 11:20 a.m. date. In the southwestern Michigan, the following counties, Allegan County, Van Buren County, the western part of Kalamazoo County, St. Joe County, Cass County, and Berrien County. All of the roads are blocked. This includes the main expressways, trunk lines, and side roads.
January 26, 1967, dawned much like any midwinter day. All trace of previous snow had disappeared. At 8:45 a.m., a light snow started to fall. By mid-morning, the storm increased in intensity. At noon, it became evident this was no ordinary snowfall. Better than a foot of snow on the ground, traffic slowed, visibility reaching the zero mark. At 3:30 on the afternoon of January 26th, most retail stores were closing, and employees were instructed to head for home as fast as possible. By nightfall, the problem worsened. Dozens of business houses and industrial plants were forced to arrange overnight accommodations for their employees. At the midnight hour, 24 inches of snow had covered the Kalamazoo area. At dawn, January 27th, almost 3 feet of the heavy wet flakes had blanketed everything in sight. During the next 3 days, WKZO Radio coordinated and broadcast literally thousands of emergency messages.
There's a fellow stranded in one of the cars out here. He needs insulin.
He needs insulin?
Yeah. I wonder if there'd be anybody in the area would have it around through here. There's no way of getting him out. The road's plugged.
Hey, my husband's a heart patient.
Yes.
And we need fuel oil out here bad, and we need P-E-R-I-T-R-A-T-E. And A-N-A-L-E-X-I-N-E.
Here is a problem. Mrs. Charles Fox, 6035 Gull Road, has had no heat since yesterday afternoon. She is an elderly lady. She cannot leave the house. She needs help by a furnace repairman or other assistant.
This is Jim Stewart. I'm a local amateur radio operator located out in the city of Portage. And if someone would need emergency communications throughout the state, I would like to offer my services.
Colonel Duncan, Director of Kalamazoo County Civil Defense.
This is Sheriff Stump at Paw, Michigan.
Yes, sir.
I'm faced with a problem, and I thought maybe you and some of the listening audience might be able to help me out.
We'll certainly try.
I, last night, cared for and fed and housed about 50 people here in our county jail.
Mm-hmm.
I'm up to my capacity, and we have more people coming in. Some of these people are elderly, and of course my accommodations here aren't a Holiday Inn.
I'm calling for the men in the Kalamazoo County barns. I have fact to know that there are quite a few men in the county barns that are staying all night. Some of them can't get home, and some of them are there for a service. The only problem is they have no sleeping facilities other than the seats of their truck or the desk in the office,
mm-hmm.
and they're out of food. The
Kalamazoo City Police Department is having trouble performing their duties due to the heavy snow.
Boy, they sure are.
And they're very much in need of some skid chains, and there is a stock of chains available to them that is pretty much landlocked or snowlocked. They can't get to them because of the blocked highways.
Mm-hmm.
And I would like to suggest that if anybody having a snowmobile would volunteer to give their services to the Kalamazoo City Police Department.
Mall City Ambulance has called us during this news break that we took, and they need desperately 1 6-foot toboggan. They need two sets of 9x15 chains. Mall City Ambulance needs 1 6-foot toboggan and two sets of 900x15 chains. This is probably one of the most important things that we can get done during this hour. So let's get them a 6-foot toboggan. The phone number is Fireside 25668. To use their terminology exactly the way it was given to our news department, they need this toboggan to haul out pregnant women.
WKZO Radio provided reassurance and safety for those who knew they could not receive immediate help if needed through any other means than WKZO Radio. The fact that we were here and were available to everyone was probably our greatest overall contribution to keeping everyone's body and soul together during a time when panic could have been the worst enemy.
That was back in good old 1967. Other serious storms have come since, but none quite like that one. Travelers would drive from Grand Rapids or Holland toward Kalamazoo, not quite believing the television news film on Channel 3. They got as far as D Avenue on U.S. 131, where at one point police turned them back because that was the last chance they'd have to get them turned around without having them stuck in a snowbank. Some of those curious individuals said later they could hardly believe the snow when they actually saw it. Skis and snowmobiles were the only things that really moved for about a week, because it took that long to get drives plowed and cars dug out, even after some of the streets were reopened. In the mid-1960s, community antenna television systems were mostly a creature of mountainous terrain. Few people considered them of value, except in areas where only one or no television reception was available. Kalamazoo became one of the first cities in the nation to have those kinds of services. Since that time, CATV has expanded its horizons to become a major segment of the communications industry, and Fetzer Cablevision in Kalamazoo has been one of the leaders in that arena. Sports fans had a big day in Michigan in 1968. Indeed, it seemed everyone was a baseball fan as the season drew to a close.
And the windup and the pitch. He swings a line shot. Base hit. Right field. The Tigers win it. Here comes K-Line to score. And it's all over. Don Wirt singles. The Tigers mob Don. K-Line has scored. The fans are steaming on the field. And the Tigers have won their first pennant since 1945. Let's listen to the bedlam here at Tiger Stadium.
And as everyone knows, the Tigers went on to defeat the St. Louis Cardinals in 7 games and become the world champs. Honors are always welcome, but none so much as those that come from your peers. John E. Fetzer became the recipient of the highly coveted National Association of Broadcasters Distinguished Service Award in 1969. He joined the list of the real great pioneers of the industry who have received broadcasting's highest honor. After the 60s, the 70s were anticipated as a time when perhaps things would level out. Not so. Early in the year, Vice President Spiro Agnew resigned under a cloud of accusations that he accepted bribes while governor of Maryland and even took some of the money while he served as vice president. President Nixon moved quickly to name a successor under a never-before-used constitutional amendment. He chose Gerald R. Ford, the 5th District Congressman from Michigan. The Grand Rapids native was readily confirmed by the Congress, and Jerry, as he was known in the area, became Mr. Vice President. He had a turbulent time in office as the Watergate accusations of cover-up mounted. President Nixon denied everything. Ford said he believed Nixon, and then new information was given Ford, and he stopped his campaign of defense for the president. It was August of 74 when Richard Nixon stepped down from the nation's highest office, and Gerald R. Ford took the most powerful chair in the land, perhaps the world. During his vice presidency, he made visits to the area and continued the practice while president, probably the most West Michigan will see of a vice president or president for some time to come. The 70s brought many other changes. For instance, our shopping patterns changed with construction of malls around the edge of the city. The West Main and Maple Hill malls in Oshtemo, Southland converted to a mall, and finally, the Crossroads were constructed, both of those in Portage. Kalamazoo had a big controversy in the 70s. In 1971, United States District Judge Noel Fox ruled at Muskegon that Kalamazoo schools were segregated and ordered busing to desegregate the classrooms. The move followed a first instituted plan by a Board of Education, which subsequently was changed in makeup during an election that shifted the balance of power from those seeing busing as necessary to those that were opposed to it. The court suit followed that board shift and the membership change. Later in the decade, Kalamazooans became disenchanted with the board's newer direction and recalled all but one member. The Arab oil embargo in the early 70s brought a host of changes in lifestyles to most of us. Long pleasure sightseeing drives were reduced, smaller cars became important, and we all dialed down the thermostat. The president and the governor ordered many government building cutbacks, and city and county budgets were clobbered by gasoline bills that seemed to triple overnight. Electricity was a controversial issue in the 70s, the way to make it anyway. The Palisades nuclear plant was the target of many slings and arrows as it was built and has been operated. The Cook plant near Bridgman didn't take as much heat, probably because so much attention was directed toward Palisades. In Kalamazoo, a new International Hockey League franchise was approved, and the K-Wings were born in the mid-70s. Then, 11 years after the crippling storm of 67, West Michigan was clobbered again by another snowstorm. The difference this time was that the expected snow came during the night. People weren't trapped at work. They couldn't get out of their homes, almost literally in some cases. As West Michigan awoke that January morning, they heard WKZO newscaster Jim Bernstein and announcers Ralph Grant and Jerry Raffle doing what seemed to be a repeat of the earlier snow emergency situation.
Now with the news, here is Jim Bernstein. Good morning, Jim.
Good morning, Ralph. As many of you already know, blizzard conditions exist throughout southwest lower Michigan this morning. And according to the National Weather Service, in a special weather statement, southwest lower Michigan is at a standstill. 8 inches of new snow has fallen in Grand Rapids at the Weather Service office since yesterday evening, and Michigan State Police report a foot or more has fallen at many southwest lower Michigan locations. Most roads are closed. Snow drifts of 6 feet or more are reported at many locations. Winds will increase to 30 or 45 miles an hour with stronger gusts to prevent road conditions from being improved upon. Earlier this morning, Ralph Grant talked to the superintendent of the Kalamazoo County Road Commission, Paul Piles.
We have Paul Piles, superintendent of the Kalamazoo County Road Commission, on the line with us. Paul, what's the condition of the roads in the county today?
I don't think we have any roads that are open to traffic at this time. Anything that we are opening up is blowing back in shut within 10 to 15 minutes. We are asking everybody to stay home.
That was a busy year in the Kalamazoo area. Earlier in the decade, the Burdick Block, as it was known in the Central Business District of Kalamazoo, was leveled. The Hanselman Building was literally blown down as the Kalamazoo Center, a unique joint venture between the city of Kalamazoo and private enterprise, was erected. Voters late in the decade, tired of waiting for trains, decided to push for a change in the railroads and approved a multi-million dollar bond issue to consolidate rails and eliminate unnecessary ones in the Central Business District. In the 70s found Kalamazoo's two hospitals, the Borges Medical Center and Bronson Methodist Hospital, making major additions to their expertise. They've become the Western Michigan Regional Healthcare Centers, doing virtually everything in medicine that is done, except for heart transplants, and few other hospitals do those anymore. The 1980s arrived, and the biggest story in Western Michigan was to come in May, when a tornado touched down in Van Buren County and virtually continued its path all the way through Kalamazoo and out the east side. That May 13th, 5 people died.
I was listening to the news and weather, and I thought, gee, that doesn't sound so good.
Yeah.
Along with the barometer and the whole bit. And so I just kept WKZO on and was listening. Then I turned the television on and turned the volume down to watch what was going on. And it was on WKZO where I heard that the tornado hit touchdown at 40 and 43. And so I thought, well, I guess I'd better try and call a couple of my girls to see if they were okay, and even couldn't get through then. And so I just put, well, one of the dogs, it was really strange. I knew something was wrong when the poodle, his hair stood right up on end. And I thought, oh, and he fussed. And I let him down the basement, and I thought, well, maybe I should go down too, but I stayed up.
Reporter Jim Rennick and I were downtown within minutes of the touchdown in the Central Business District. And what we found down there when we got there was a scene of destruction almost beyond belief. The storm had struck shortly after 4 o'clock, catching many shoppers and office workers almost by surprise. The twister had hopscotched the Central Business District, seemingly choosing all the city's major buildings and landmarks for demolition. Bronson Park had become a huge heap of twisted and torn trees, and we saw emergency medical crews trying to revive a victim in the park. The first, as it turns out, of many victims that day. The buildings that had been the pride of the downtown Kalamazoo area all sustained very heavy damage. Nearly every window blown out of the ISB Bank building. Hunks of glass still falling out of many of them, crashing to the street below. And the Kalamazoo Center, as you see there, with windows blown out and merchandise from the shops scattered on the streets and sidewalks. A look up at some of the city's tallest office buildings revealed walls torn away, offices exposed, papers and other debris still fluttering down through the air. The city's downtown Kalamazoo Mall, the first of its kind in the nation, was devastated. All the stores and shops along the mall had taken the brunt of the storm's fury, but some of the worst damage came at the Gilmore Department Store, where the entire rear wall had been peeled away, sending a mountain of debris plunging down on the street. Later, two of the dead would be found in the rubble there. The sound of sirens pierced the air as dazed residents walked about, many of them asking about friends or co-workers missing since the storm struck. Teams of police began a search of the hardest-hit buildings, looking for any victims still trapped, and eyewitnesses told of shock and terror.
Twister coming over the county building. I told everybody to get out of there, and there was a mass exodus down to the stairwell. Hundreds of people got downstairs, approximately, and people were coming in off the street and into the downstairs of the ISB building. It was packed, and there's no word on injuries or anything right now. Police are too busy taking care of everything. We don't know. The whole front of the ISB building is demolished window-wise. The windows are all out.
That was a look with executive news producer Russ Burkos at downtown Kalamazoo right after the storm hit. He didn't mention the St. Augustine Elementary School, which was virtually demolished. Fortunately, nobody, not even the custodian, was in the building. Elsewhere in 1980, the Superior Metal Shredder was making news in Kalamazoo. Richard Enslin became a federal judge. Kalamazoo State Hospital, which serves all of western Michigan, was under fire. Patricia Camberg became the first woman president of the Michigan Municipal League. Fourth District Congressman David Stockman became director of the federal budget. In Van Buren County, Sheriff Richard Stump was succeeded by retired State Police Lieutenant Cal Rosema, and Kalamazoo's school administrators unionized. Moving into this year, the history that you're most familiar with, because it's the most frequent, those school administrators struck. Kalamazoo water problems continued to make news. The state hospital cuts continued to make news. Mark Siljander was elected to succeed David Stockman as the 4th District Congressman. The halfway house inmates moved from one part of the Central Business District out to the Kalamazoo Regional Psychiatric Hospital area. Siljander was sworn into office. Over in Allegan, parents were involved in a school controversy. There was an explosion at the American Cyanamid plant. Allegan teachers went on strike. They dedicated the Ford Museum in Grand Rapids. There was a major controversy in the middle of the year that continues today on an abortion involving a 12-year-old girl, a court ruling that said that she did not have to have one, in fact, didn't have one. Late in the year, Governor Milliken made a major speech on what he considered the number one issue in Michigan today, workman's comp, in Kalamazoo, and then later announced that he would retire and not seek another term after serving as governor of the state of Michigan longer than anyone else. That's a look at 50 years of news in West Michigan. You've also heard decades of live Kalamazoo City Commission broadcasts and other news events, many 15-minute locally prepared newscasts daily, and more locally produced sports play-by-play than any other station in western Michigan. Thanks for this program to WKZO News and announcing personnel and the Kalamazoo Public Library for assistance in some of the research. Thanks to you for joining us. For WKZO News, I'm Fred Douglas.